Oh, my goodness, look who's here. Holy cow, over there. Oh, look, all those people sent me emails and said they were never going to listen again. Well, welcome back, truth seekers. It is 7 past the hour. Welcome to tonight's version of the Molloy program here on the Nova M radio network. Yeah, I've gotten an abundance of emails in the past couple of days. I'll never listen to you again, blah, blah, blah. But there you are. we have one clip of Too Stupid to Chew a Pretzel tonight for you, which we're going to play momentarily. More bad economic news. Boy, how much more can we take? I'm amazed. Here in the Atlanta area, and I realize we probably have a lower gasoline price per gallon than other parts of the country. I think about Chicago. I'm surprised. Are they up to $4 yet, West Coast? We pay $3.15 a gallon here, which is staggering. And yet, today when I gassed up the pickup truck, I pull in, and they're just a chock-a-block with cars. And well, not cars. Come on, nobody drives cars down here. A chock-a-block with SUVs and monster trucks, and you know, I have my little Ford Ranger. What's it going to take? I don't know. But people are hurting. People are really hurting. So the halfwit in the White House gets out there today and stands in front of a microphone and talks about, we lost a few jobs, but you know what? We took action. We really did. We came up with we anticipated this. So we're sending you some hush money. We're going to, 130 million American households are going to get some money. And, that'll boost consumer spending. All you good little consumers out there, your $300. What is that? $300. You know what that is? For most people, that's 4.5 tanks of gas. That's a week's supply of groceries. Oh, way to go. So, and he still insists that the economy is starting to slow down. Economists are pulling their hair out in huge, bloody clumps. And the halfwit stands there and says, Oliver North, who should have been put out of his misery a long time ago.
Well, what do you mean by that, Mike?
He should have been put out to, out on a farm someplace and just left alone. But Fox News loves to corral these crazy people, like Hannity, like O'Reilly, and like Oliver North. Oliver North is certifiably insane. This is a guy who, when he came back from Vietnam, ran around Bethesda Naval Hospital with a loaded .45 sidearm, threatening anyone who got within 100 yards of him. They finally had to subdue him, inject him with medications, and then he became one of Ronald Reagan's chief advisors when Oliver North dealt with the people who had blown up 241 of his comrades in Beirut. He cut deals with the Iranians to weapons for hostages so they could get money to fund the murderous activities that Oliver North was involved in Central America, executing and destroying and butchering and chopping hundreds of thousands of Central Americans. This Oliver North, of course, that's the kind of people Fox News Channel likes. He has his own radio program. He and Sean Hannity wants to have sex with him. It is so obvious every time this guy's on Hannity's program. He calls it, what does he call him, Colonel? Oh, Colonel North. Hi, Colonel North. Come here. Can I touch you? Here, can I pet the bunny? Oliver North knows why The jerk on the bicycle threw what amounted to a compacted package of those little firecrackers, the cherry bombs that you buy on the 4th of July at the recruiting station. Oliver North knows why, even though newspapers in New York now are already figured out who this guy is. Well, the papers have and the police have. You know, this guy has a habit of riding by embassies and consulates and recruiting stations and tossing his little homemade bombs, which, like I say, I wouldn't want one under my pillow. But, I mean, in the great world of car bombs and death and destruction, this guy puts together a little ammo box full of black powder and tosses it with a fuse and boom. Well, Oliver North knows where that guy came from and why he did what he did. So. Oh, and we also have a statement, a press release on, from the Green Party of the United States on the activities of the Israeli Defense Forces in the occupied territories. So let's begin with Mr. Wizard emerging from his mansion and speaking to the proles today. This is Bush on the economy, about the sorry state of his economy. It's his economy. It's all his. I know the Republican crazy still and say, well, Bill Clinton started it. You know, goddamn Bill Clinton, you know what he did? He handed off a balanced budget, and he handed off paying down the federal debt by trillions over the next 10 years. It's his fault. Then when George Bush went to cut taxes, well, all this happened. So it's all Bill Clinton's fault. Anyway, he comes out and his magical thinking was in full force as he predicted that those $300 government checks would miraculously erase the recession. And of course, the government spent $40 million to mail the letters to taxpayers to alert. Did we get one of those? No, we didn't get one. No, I wonder why. They spent $40 million sending letters telling the taxpayers that their $300 check was on the way in May. And like I said, what's $300 going to buy? Three tanks of gas, maybe four, trip to the grocery store. Yeah, that's going to turn everything around.
This morning we learned that our economy lost 63,000 payroll jobs in February, although the unemployment rate improved to 4.8%.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Losing a job is painful.
Like in baseball.
I don't know, Americans are concerned about our economy.
Well, not really.
So am I.
Oh!
It's clear our economy is slowed.
Yeah.
But the good news is we anticipated this and took decisive action to bolster the economy.
Yay!
By passing a growth package that will put money into the hands of American workers and businesses.
Yay!
The growth package will provide tax rebates to more than 130 million American households.
Yay!
These rebates will begin reaching American families in May.
And
when the money reaches the American people,
yeah,
we expect they will use it to boost consumer spending, and that will spur job creation as well.
How?
So my message to the American people is this.
I
know this is a difficult time for our economy, but we recognized the problem early and provided the economy with a booster shot.
Booster shot. Interesting choice of words there, since people who are struggling to make ends meet can't go get their flu shots, can't do anything. Oh, wait a minute. Flu shots cause autism, right? Anyway. Can you believe this? It's not that Bush is in denial. Everyone knows he's a dumbass. It's just that he thinks Bush, being having the mental makeup that he has, does not understand that, no, you're not the smartest person out there, George. And no, when you stand up there and say this kind of tripe garbage, the American people are not just sitting there focused on your every word and going, well, yeah, well, that's right. Well, okay. Oh, God, I'm glad I'm American. You know, that's not what we're doing, Bush. We are giving you the finger. Everyone in the country, even the Republicans, are doing it now. How many Republicans running for re-election have invited you to appear at their rallies? McCain. But McCain is as insane as you are. Did you see him melt down on the airplane today? Did you see that video? He was going to grind up that reporter no matter what. You know what I said? You know what I said, my friends. You all know what I said. My friends, you know what I said. They went on this plane. You're my friends. You know what I said. God damn it, you know what I said, my friends! Right? Did you see that? Wasn't that cool? Today has been a weird day. Hillary Clinton, described by Obama staffer as a monster. You know, I kept waiting for the punchline. And the woman who ratted her out, another one of those sleazy press people who happens to hold a Pulitzer Prize, released the full transcript of the interview. Hillary Clinton's a monster. What would make Hillary a monster? Well, we have some suggestions coming up a little bit later. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Tax cuts matter. You see, when somebody builds a new building, somebody's got to come and build the building. And when the building expanded, it prevented additional opportunities for people to work. New opportunity employments.
Oh, Jesus. And the unemployment rate is 4.8%, chuckle nuts, because hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people have just given up. The real unemployment figure in this country is in the double digits, kind of like it was back during the Reagan years, the first 3 or 4 years of the Reagan years. But never mind. McCain, now, he's kind of dumped Pastor Hagee, the one who wants to cut the throats of every single Jew that doesn't accept Jesus Christ as his Lord and personal Savior. But until that time, Pastor Hagee wants to use him so that the Lord Jesus Christ will return. All that said, well, McCain is trying to distance himself now from Hagee, not because of Hagee's position on slitting the throats of Jews, but because of Hagee's position on the Catholic Church. and other madness. Don't you love religion? So Hagee, or McCain has left Hagee. You know who his new evangelical sponsor is? 3, 2, 1. Tim LaHaye. Now, do you know who Tim LaHaye is? He's the one who wrote the Left Behind series. The books, he's one of the co-writers. The books have sold tens of millions of copies. There are these science fiction books about what happens when the rapture occurs, and the it's a serialization in fiction form of another bit of fiction, the Book of Revelation. Only they extended out, what, there's 8 or 9 of these books, 10 books, and every snake handling Christian in the world has bought one of these or 10 of these. And has read about how they're poorly written. They're the most horrifically written books. If you've ever read one, I tried to read one. Oh, my God. But anyway, Tim LaHaye is one of those people who believes that he's going to be walking down the street someday, and all of a sudden his clothes are going to fall into a pile on the street, his glasses will pitch off, his false teeth will hit the curb, his wig will fall off, and he, Tim LaHaye, the real part of him, will rise naked in heaven to meet the Lord. Brian in Olympia wrote, every time I hear more about Tim LaHaye, his efforts and his influence on this country, I throw my arms up in the air. I can hardly believe this is happening. And I wonder how the hell tens of millions of Americans believe this end times stuff so literally. Forget Ann Coulter. We've got to keep our eye on the LaHayes, who strike a deeper chord with impressionable conservatives. These evangelical crazies are worse than a typical cult because they want all of us and all other organic earth life on earth to die, not just themselves. They do. You know, the Comet cult and all these other cults, you know, they're willing to just commit suicide and be done with it. But the Tim LaHaye crowd and these evangelists, they want us all to die. They want everything to die. Just wipe it clean. We're just covered in sin down here. And amazingly, they have become serious power players in determining who our next president will be and who the last one was. Brian writes, fundamentalist Christians of this stripe are anti-intellectual, anti-education, anti-ecology, anti-democracy, anti-freedom. They remind me so much of the Taliban that it is laughable. What a cosmic joke it is that this planet may perish between these two extremes. And really, over what? And at a time when humanity has evolved just enough to have the potential to solve most of the world's problems, given the chance. And then Brian writes, I know you are fond of your former days of dabbling in psychedelics, as am I. I don't do the hard ones anymore either. Seriously, the only thing I can think of that has the best chance of stopping all this madness is the legalization and encouragement of psychedelics everywhere in the world. Some people will go off the deep end, have bad trips, and freak out, but so what? The world is at stake. And the only thing I can think of that can disrupt this craziness is a miracle drug that can literally deprogram our psychological conditioning for enough time to get us to think twice about everything, including religion and hatred and violence and fundamentalist thinking. If we don't evolve quickly, we're doomed. Period. Brian, Olympia, Washington. Yeah. Is it not madness, though? On the one hand, you have the Christian fundamentalists. On the other hand, you have the Muslim fundamentalists. Both of them want to kill the Jews, and all the Jews want to do is kill the Palestinians. That's all. It's incredible. And here we are, as Brian points out, at a point in human evolution and human history where there is not a problem that we are faced with. That we do not have the, if not the technology, the collective mental energy to solve. There's not a problem. No, death is not a problem. Death is normal and natural. But there's not a problem. And what are we doing? Well, you know what we're doing. We're figuring out new ways to kill each other while we scream, "My God's better than yours."
By his story, would you believe he had an eye infection? And yeah, God looks baked. Yeah, God smells.
I think actually the spending in the war might help with jobs because we're buying equipment and people are working. I think this economy is down because we built too many houses.
Yeah, war is good. Building houses is bad, but war is good. Yeah. That is beyond sick. That's beyond perverse. That is what a war criminal says. That's what a cowardly war criminal. He didn't have the guts to go kill people himself. He, you know, sends other... Oh, never mind. Katie writes, "Good morning, Mike." She wrote this morning. "For months now, I've had the strong opinion that whomever Barack or Hillary got the nomination, we should, as good Democrats, support that nominee. I did not want to see 2000 ever again. Hillary has killed it for me. Her recent behavior has exposed a real nasty, ugly person willing to destroy her own party and country for the presidency. Her attacks on Barack, her statement that McCain is better qualified, are inexcusable." Jesus, God. Yeah, I've never heard that one before. This is not Katie writing. This is me. I've never heard a Democrat or a Republican in the primary season say, well, the person of the other party is more qualified than... Oh, never mind. Katie says, "I will still vote for Barack. I understand his voting record, but I think he could become a progressive given a chance. If Hillary is the one, I'm voting for Nader. At least he speaks for me." Yeah, Hillary, anyone who's paying attention, and this must be murder for the Hillary supporters. This must be absolute murder to see the tactics that she is employing against Obama. And I know a lot of people who are Hillary supporters will be in utter denial and say something like, well, you know, given what she has put up with, given the attacks that she sustained for 8 years from the vast right-wing conspiracy or the flying monkey right, whatever you want to call them, it's no wonder she, well, okay, if... That's just one rationale. And Barry writes, "A caller to Jeff Ferris's program explained it quite well, I think, why Barack Obama, to the chagrin of some of the other liberal radio hosts, hasn't retaliated in kind to Hillary Clinton's astounding behavior. And here it is. A black man can't talk about a white woman that way. He has no choice but to take it politely." Whoa, I hadn't thought of that. That's a damn good point. You know, why do we have lynchings and murders and executions, summary executions, and people dragged behind pickup trucks until they came apart, or their body parts flew off into cornfields? Why did that happen? It had to do with black men and white women. Come on, let's get real here, right? Huh? It hadn't crossed my mind that maybe one of the reasons Barack Obama does not respond the way Hillary Clinton attacks could have something to do with that hideous, horrible, ugly dynamic. But I think Barry and the caller to Jeff Farias' program may, by God, be onto something. Black man in the United States doesn't sass a white woman. Huh? And from Lee writes regarding the statement that Hillary Clinton is a monster by the Barack person. Lee writes, from the email calling Mr. She is a monster. Starting from the email calling Obama a Muslim. Not that that's an insult, but in the context of current American history, it makes people shudder and run for their blankets and hide under the bed until Homeland Security can protect us. But from the email calling Mr. Obama a Muslim, saying that he swore in on the Quran from her staff in Iowa, to comparing Mr. Obama to Ken Starr, the list is long and true, because Hillary is a monster and probably will be McCain's vice president. After all, she's already started campaigning for him. Oh, God. Isn't this fun, huh? See, this is what the Democrats tried to avoid by front-loading the primary process. Oh, well, we'll have this settled by, before Super Tuesday. Oliver North, who is, in my opinion, and the opinion of a lot of people who were in the military, Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North was a disgrace to his uniform, a disgrace to the Marine Corps, totally violated his oath as an officer and a member of the Marine Corps when he got involved in all these dirty tricks to thwart the U.S. Constitution back during the reign of Ronald Reagan. And now, and not only that, he's the guy who negotiated with the same people who killed 241 of his Marine brothers in their barracks in Beirut. That was during the Iran-Contra affair, right? So he now blames the Times Square bombing the other day on Pelosi and the House Democrats, even though the investigation, as preliminary as it is so far, seems to indicate that this guy riding the bicycle, I don't know where they get their information, I guess they found the bicycle, I don't know, but he seems to be just some kind of a nutball cruising the streets of Manhattan, doing things like this, throwing these little toy bombs wherever he has occasion to throw them, whether they're embassies or consulates or, in this case, the military recruiting office. Anyway, Oliver North decided that it's to be blamed on Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats. He said the incident may have been prevented had Pelosi granted a renewal of the Protect America Act. the Protect America Act. That's the one that grants retroactive immunity for the law-breaking of the telecom companies and anyone else who wants to violate the Constitution. It has nothing to do with protecting Americans! Anyway, this is what he said on his radio program. Last month, of course, the U.S. House of Representatives, under the direction of Nancy Pelosi, went on vacation rather than voting on the Protect America Act, which provided for wiretapping of terrorists making phone calls into and out of the United States to foreign places.
that's
it. There you go.
And I note that it would have been a lot easier, perhaps, to find out who did this or even know that they were planning it had we been able to intercept those communications.
Now, that's what he said. And the thing is, the half-wits, the morons, the knuckle-draggers, the mouth-breathers, the snake-handlers, in other words, your typical Republican who listens to Oliver North and who, like Sean Hannity, wants to have sex with him, absolutely sucks that stuff up.
Yeah, that's it.
because these poor dumb bastards don't understand that the FISA Act is still in place. All you have to do is go get a warrant. You can get the warrant retroactively. If you want to spy on somebody, go ahead, do it. If you want to intercept their telecommunications, go ahead, do it. It's perfectly legal as long as you do it with a warrant. But you see, Oliver North, being the great defender of the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, sees it differently. You see, because he's an insane son of a bitch who, what did he say one time when he was asked if he was going to run for public office? The only thing I'm running for is husband of the year. Remember that? Now, the comments by this sad sack is an attempt to, of course, politicize this bombing. The fact is that surveillance under the law will continue. Intelligence officials can, yesterday, today, tomorrow, initiate new surveillance against suspected terrorists by simply getting a warrant through the FISA court. And they can get it retroactively. They have, like, what is it, a week, 10 days after the surveillance has begun. Of course, North, being the absolute uniformed fascist that he is, he doesn't mention that to the mouth-breathing, snake-handling, knuckle-draggling, psychopathic Republicans that suck up his program and want to have sex with him, just like Sean Hannity does. He doesn't mention that. But, Glenn Beck is another one. Glenn Beck, Oliver North, they are out-perverting even Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh. Glenn Beck, on the headline news the other day, I understand it, and here it said, Nancy Pelosi will end up killing Americans. Son of a bitch. I mean, but Oliver North, Glenn Beck is just a pimple on the butt of CNN headline news right now. Too bad Ted Turner doesn't get his network back. The first thing he would do with Glenn Beck is take him out behind the CNN building and spank him, take his pants down and just wail his ass. I know Ted Turner. And one of Turner's big laments at this stage in his life is that he let CNN fall into the hands of people who would put a Glenn Beck on one of his networks. So anyway, Oliver North, the crazed psychopath, storming through the aisles of Bethesda Naval Hospital, waving a fully loaded .45 caliber service revolver, threatening anyone who got near him until he was finally subdued by the hospital equivalent of SPs, who finally put him down, and I guess they fixed him and turned him loose. And one of the first things he did after Reagan got inaugurated was to begin work on organizing death squads and deals with America's enemies, the very people who murdered 241 of his comrades. Oliver North has no respect for the Corps, no sense of loyalty. He is a disgrace.
Next best thing to an impeachment hearing, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
10 before the hour, Pam in Tucson writes that the caller to Jeff Ferris' show who made the point that Barack is a black man cannot respond in kind to Hillary because she's a white woman. The caller was a black woman. And Pam writes, I think she knows what she's talking about. Yeah, yeah, there's no question. That is so deeply embedded in American culture at this point. The argument has been made. No offense to white women. I'm married to one. I have several as daughters. But the statement has been made, or a good case has been made, that the entire oppression beyond slavery of black people in this country had to do with the sanctity of white women and the fact that, you know, one might possibly be defiled by a black man. It's no matter where you turn in this culture, this society, no matter what you try to do, there it is. There it is. The racism. And the fact that we now have a black man and a white woman running for president is just, it's like a cultural spasm. It's just, I mean, it's wonderful on the one hand. It's frightening on the other. And on the third hand, if you happen to have three, it's very confusing. The Green Party of the United States, their website is gp.org. This came out Monday. We were otherwise occupied. The Greens blast Clinton, Obama, and McCain for uncritical support of Israel despite mounting crimes. The press release says, calling the siege of Gaza an international emergency, the Green Party is urging Congress to reject Bush's 2009 budget request for $2.5 billion in foreign military financing for Israel. And reiterated the call for a cutoff of all U.S. military aid to Israel. The statement says, Holly Hart, the Secretary of the Green Party of the U.S. and member of People for Justice in Palestine, in response to the mass killing of Palestinians during the last weekend, said the following in the press release, the siege of Gaza is an ongoing atrocity with mounting civilian casualties, especially children, killed and maimed by Israeli defense forces. Greens are demanding an end to the siege and to the occupation of Palestinian lands, to Israel's collective punishment of Palestinians, and to targeted assassinations, all of which violate international law. End quote. The press release goes on. Greens noted that the death toll of Palestinians killed by Israeli forces has doubled since the Annapolis peace talks sponsored by the U.S. in November 2007. In some areas of the West Bank, home invasions by IDF since January 1 have resulted in the kidnapping and detention without charge of nearly 400 civilians, including children, 1.5 million Gazans, mostly refugees from Israel in 1948, live in an open-air prison, unable to exit without electricity, fuel, and water under Israeli control. David Kalbflush, a Green congressional candidate in Illinois' 10th District, said, quote, peace talks are a sham as long as Israel refuses to discuss the construction of new housing units for Jewish settlers throughout occupied East Jerusalem and the rest of the West Bank. Israel must meet its obligations under UN Security Council Resolution 242, end quote. Press release goes on. The Green Party has already called for an economic boycott and divestment of Israel until the occupation is ended and full human rights and equality are realized throughout historic Palestine, including Israel, and recognition of the right of return. Green leaders emphasizing the need for popular pressure on the U.S. government, similar to the campaign against South African apartheid 2 decades ago, have supported the efforts of Palestinian and Israeli peace groups to seek negotiations and a halt to violence, and are urging participation in the Palestine boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign. The President Bush, the President's 2009 budget request would enact a 9% increase over 2007 spending and would be the first installment of a 10-year agreement between the U.S. and Israel signed in August 2007 to increase military aid by 25%, totaling $30 billion by fiscal year 2018. The arms purchased through foreign military financing are being used to enforce Israel's 40-year military occupation and siege of the Palestinian West Bank, East Jerusalem, and the Gaza, and for violation of human rights in the occupied territories and against civilians in Lebanon. Such use of weapons purchased with U.S. money violates the Arms Export Control Act and Foreign Assistance Act. Those are our laws, but it doesn't matter here. Justine McCabe, who's co-chair of the Green Party's International Committee, said, quote, the Green Party has repeatedly called for an end to Israel's illegal occupation, for enforcement of human rights laws consistently violated for Israel, and for an end to all attacks against unarmed civilians by either side. She goes on to say, quote, under the influence of AIPAC and other pro-Israel lobbies, John McCain, Hillary Clinton, and Barack Obama have bent over backwards to support the Israel government and avoid criticism, even as Israel warns that it may invade, and Israeli Deputy Defense Minister Matan Vilna threatens Palestinians in the Gaza with what he called a Holocaust. If the national debate on the Middle East is restricted to Democratic and Republican positions in 2008, the crisis and the atrocities will continue regardless of who wins the White House. End quote. If you want to see the statement in full, go to gp.org. And Ave, I got an email from Johannesburg, South Africa last night. The subject line says, we Jews in the diaspora are loath to admit our own faults and see Israel through rose-colored glasses. D.P. Lang from Johannesburg, South Africa, writes, sorry for the assault from my fellow Hebrews, Mike. We are often not as enlightened as we'd like to believe. Two-state solution? Garbage. Only both sides sharing the same land will ever resolve both claims. Painting the Palestinians into a corner, demarcated as 22% of their original land, and then offering them a corner of that is not a solution. Be well. D.P. Lang, Johannesburg, South Africa. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. This is the Malloy Program on the Nova M Radio Network. If you would like to comment on what we've talked about so far, give us a call. The number is 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. We will take a couple of calls on as we go along here, if you like. Greg Palast has something new out regarding the invasion by Colombia of Ecuador in order to kill people and do bad things. We've been talking about this week. We've had topics this week that I apologize for the emphasis on murder and mayhem and destruction and lies and deceit. And but of course, that's Bush's America. The situation between or the situation in the occupied territories is an absolute atrocity. It has been going on for 40 years. And if you want to go before that, go ahead. I mean, it's awful. The situation in trying to destabilize Venezuela's leader, a freely elected leader, by the way, who tried to step outside of his own sphere of constitutional power in Venezuela and extend his time in the presidency, and the voters of Venezuela slapped him down, said no. Don't even try it, Hugo. So, you know, would that we could do that with Bush here, right? But that's not the way our system works. So this long, incredible history of military intervention that the United States has had in Central and South America, that I will guarantee you not one in 10,000 Americans, not one in 100,000 Americans knows about. It just, you know, you can You can get an entire list if you want to at angelfire.com. But, I mean, when you take a look at it, in 1891 in Chile, Marines sent there. In 1890 in Argentina, troops sent to Buenos Aires to protect U.S. business interests. Nicaragua, 1894, troops occupied a city on the Caribbean Sea for a month to support American business interests. These are some of the instances that Smedley Butler wrote about. Cuba, 1898 to 1902, troops seized Cuba in the Spanish-American War. Puerto Rico, 1898. Nicaragua, 1898, Marines landed in the port of San Juan del Sur. Panama, Navy supported the revolution when Panama claimed independence from Colombia, but then American troops occupied the canal zone since 1901. Honduras, 1903, Marines invaded to intervene during a revolution. Dominican Republic, 1903. Cuba again, 1906, 1909, U.S. troops land during an election. Nicaragua again, 1907. Honduras, 1907. Panama, 1908, Marines sent in during Panama's election. Nicaragua, 1910. Honduras, 1911. Cuba again, 1912. Panama again, 1912. Honduras, 1912. Nicaragua, 1912 to 1923. U.S. troops occupied Nicaragua and fought guerrillas during its 20-year-long civil war until we won and established the Somoza regime that resulted in the revolution in the 70s when Daniel Ortega said we've had enough. Mexico, 1913. Dominican Republic again, 1914. Mexico, 1914 to 1918. Haiti, for 20 years, U.S. troops occupied that small, sad country. Until we got the kind of government we wanted, which was totally corrupt. Dominican Republic again. Marines went in 1916, stayed for 8 years. Cuba again, 1917 to 1933. Honduras again, 1924 and 25. Panama again in 1925. El Salvador in 1932. In 1932, we sent naval warships to harass the El Salvadoran FMLN. Under the revolutionary Martí, who was leading the revolution against the oppressive right-wing regime. Uruguay, 1947, bombers deployed as a show of military force. Puerto Rico, military in 1950, our military helped crush an independence rebellion in Ponce. Guatemala, 1954, we overthrew the government of Arbenz and placed a Colonel Armas in power. You want more? I know it's boring. Cuba, 1961, Bay of Pigs. Cuba, 1962, the Navy quarantine of Cuba during the missile crisis. Panama, 1964, troops in again. Dominican Republic, troops in 65 and 66. Some of you are old enough to remember that. Troops deployed during a national election. Guatemala again in 66 and 67. The Green Berets were sent in. El Salvador, 1981 to 1992, the CIA, U.S. military, and advisors aid in El Salvador's war against the FMLN. Nicaragua again, Contra War in 1981 to 1990. Honduras, 1989. Grenada, 1983 and 84, the American invasion after Oliver North. This is 83 and 84. That's when Ali was working with the Iranians right after they blew up our Marine barracks in Lebanon. Instead of invading Lebanon, Reagan ordered an invasion of Grenada. You know, look over here. Don't look at what just happened. Look over here. Bolivia, 1986. U.S. Army assisted government troops on raids of cocaine areas. What else? Panama, again, 1989-1990. That's when we sent 27,000 Americans to overthrow Noriega, who had been a CIA agent for 12 years, about to blow the whistle on the drug smuggling engineered by Pappy Bush. So we went and got him, and in the process killed about 8,000 Panamanian civilians. Haiti again in 94 and 96 during the reign of Bill Clinton. It just goes on and on. We have a nasty history in Central and South America that everybody in Central and South America knows about, and nobody in the United States knows about. The reason we don't know about it is because, A, we are grossly ignorant where it concerns what our governments have been doing in our names for the past 125 years. But the ignorance is willful. We can blame the media until hell freezes over. But the information is out there. There is no reason now for anyone not to understand exactly what we have done in this hemisphere and other parts of the world in the name of corporate America. There is no reason not to understand how many Laotians or Hondurans or Cambodians or Filipinos or Chileans or, I mean, just go on and on, have died because of U.S. policy that said we are not going to work for democracy. We're going to work for oppression and right-wing military control so that our corporations can do business without dealing with all this bat squeeze like unions, like social justice, like taking care of the environment that we rip to pieces while we try to sell people in these countries their own water or their own oil. I mean, come on.
Jesus, Malloy, you're sure anti-American.
No, I'm not. I'm anti-American foreign policy where it concerns the wholesale slaughter of people around the world. But what is appalling to me, it's just awful, is the fact that you cannot understand how few Americans know anything about our history since we decided to become an imperialist power around 1896. If you knew that history, it would be a little easier to make decisions about who we elect.
Hard for me in the, you know, living in the this beautiful White House, to give you an assessment, first-hand assessment. I haven't been there. You have. I haven't.
21 past the hour. Your phone calls. Let's start with Ron, who's calling from Sylmar, California, listening on KTLK. Hey, Ron.
Mike, I need to set you straight a little bit on the Israeli situation.
When somebody starts out with that kind of a statement with me about issues like this, I have to tell you, it immediately sends up a caution flag, but go ahead. Before you start, I don't think you can set me straight. I have been trying to be set straight on this issue for about 30 years, so I'll let you have your say, but that's not the best way to start a conversation with me. What you might want to say is, hey, Mike, I'd like to give you my opinion on the Israeli-Palestinian issue. You want to start again?
Mike.
Do you want to start again?
No.
Okay. Then I'll just move on, because you are not going to come to my program, Ron, and start out with a patronizing, condescending statement like you are going to set me straight. Do you understand?
I don't really care.
Okay, okay. Well then, goodbye. I mean, that's very simple. That's not how you approach this program. It's so clear. If you have an opinion, state it. But don't begin by telling me you're going to set me straight. No matter how incensed I get by some of the callers and emails, when I have a caller on, I don't say, now wait a minute, let me set you straight. the other night. I went on and on and on about the situation in northern South America until a guy named Gabriel called in from Miami, called in that night and the next night, to voice his opinion. And at no time did I say, let me set you straight. I disagreed with him. Don't do that, Ron, if you want to come to this program. Otherwise, go somewhere else. Very simple, very easy. You don't begin a conversation with me by being condescending and patronizing. I will not accept it. End of story. Tony is calling from Los Angeles, listening on the internet. Hey, Tony.
Hey there. What's up, my brother from another mother?
What?
That's the new one.
All right, my brother from another mother.
All right. Okay. Well, see, I'm trying to start off right. I don't want to be like that last dude.
Thank you.
What an ass. Man, these people.
I can't stand people who start out with that kind of an attitude. I mean, that's not going to take you anywhere.
Exactly.
I mean, he doesn't. I don't think he talks to his boss that way.
Nope.
Or if he has children, to their school teachers or principals. You just don't do that. What am I? You know, I'm somebody just doing my job.
Right.
I open up the phone lines and say, let's hear what you got to say. Well, I'm going to set you straight. No, you're not.
Right. No, you're not. And that same attitude is what fuels how our government has been all this time. Like you're saying, people kill me with that attitude. It's like who died and made them king?
I know.
Just like what you said with the Israeli thing, I've read extensively on a lot of that stuff, and the one guy, I can't remember his name right now, but he was saying the only way you're going to solve that issue is have a united Palestine, in the sense that Israel and Palestine have to say, hey, we're going to be one country.
We're going to be one country and one people, and of course that will never happen as long as Israel is seen as a Jewish state,
right?
And they control the guns and the rockets and the bullets and to a far greater extent than anything the Palestinians have. So it's an issue that's just going to continue.
Exactly. And what I don't understand is why, like what you're saying, it's just like Columbus. First of all, Christopher Columbus didn't discover the United States. He ended up in Jamaica. That's why they still call it Discovery Bay till today. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And you don't discover nothing when people are already there. You know what I mean? Come on now. And that same attitude, like I said, nobody's going to go anywhere. So why don't everybody just slow their roll, pump their brakes, and say, look, we got to look at this whole thing from another point of view, because nobody owns anybody. That's that whole white supremacist attitude again.
It is,
that we always talk about. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that you're everybody's father, you run everything, there is no other way than what I say. And the thing is, time is going to fix it all, because you can't, in a while, people are going to cease to exist. Now, I ain't mad at nobody, but think about it. In the world, white people are the minority.
Well,
that's
very true. I just wish, and this was the thing I liked about Barack Obama's candidacy, if he doesn't lose it, I was kind of, if he doesn't lose control,
right.
I was hoping that Obama would make a statement. It had nothing to do with being president, nothing to do with politics, but it had to do with the fact that maybe, possibly, folks in the United States had gotten beyond the race thing. And to a degree, because his support is not just coming from black folk, it's coming from white people too.
Definitely.
And the idea that this could happen, now a lot of people who back Hillary say, well, damn you, Malloy, that's what we thought about Hillary. Why is your belief good and ours isn't? I'm not saying that. I'm just saying about the race thing. That
exactly.
maybe there was a chance here that America had finally turned a corner. But I'm beginning to wonder. Tony, I got to leave it there. Thanks a lot,
all
okay?
All right, thank you.
All right, you Bye. Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Broken vows, broken dreams, broken tools, people bending. Talk Radio matters here.
Twenty-six before the hour. By the way, when am I going to do this? Sunday? Sunday night, March 9th, Sunday 9th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. I've been invited to be a guest on Democracy Interactive Radio, a program that is hosted by our good friend Daryl. And if you want to tune in, just go to democracyinteractive.com. That's Sunday night. This Sunday, 6 p.m., it's an internet program, and I don't think I've done a live internet program before. This will be fun. So that's this Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, democracyinteractive.com. And our good friend over in Alabama, Daryl, is the host. All right? That ought to be fun. I wanted to get to this thing by Greg Palast real quick. He writes for Tom Paine, "Do you believe this? This past weekend, Colombia invaded Ecuador, killed a guerrilla chief and a couple dozen other people in the jungle, opened his laptop, and what did the Colombians find? A message to Hugo Chavez that Chavez sent the FARC guerrillas $300 million, which they're using to obtain uranium to make a dirty bomb." That's what George Bush tells us, and he got that from his buddy, the strange right-wing president of Colombia, Alvaro Uribe. So, after the fact, Colombia justifies its attempt to provoke a border war as to stop the threat of weapons of mass destruction. Where have we heard that before? The U.S. press snorted up this line about Chavez's $300 million to terrorists quicker than the young Bush inhaling Colombia's powdered export. What the U.S. press did not do is look at the evidence, the email in the magic laptop. I read them. While you can read it all in Espanol, here is, in translation, the one and only mention of the alleged $300 million from Chavez is this, quote, "With relation to the $300, which from now on we will call dossier, efforts are now going forward at the instructions of the boss to the cojo," which is slang for cripple, "which I will explain in a separate note. Let's call the boss Angel and the cripple Ernesto," end quote. You got that? You got that? Okay. Now, where's Hugo? Where's the $300 million? And $300 what? Indeed, in context, the note is all about the hostage exchange with the FARC that Chavez was working on at the time at the request of the Colombian government. Indeed, the entire remainder of the email is all about the mechanism of the hostage exchange. Here's the next line, quote, "To receive the three freed ones, Chavez proposes three options. Plan A, do it via a humanitarian caravan, one that will involve Venezuela, France, the Vatican, Switzerland, European Union, Democrats, Argentina, Red Cross, etc. Take your pick. As to the 300, Palast writes, "I must note that the FARC's previous prisoner exchange involved 300 prisoners. Is that what the 300 refers to? Quién sabe? Unlike Uribe, Bush, and the U.S. press, I won't guess or make up a phantasmagoric story about Chavez mailing checks into the jungle. To bolster their case, the Colombians claim, with no evidence whatsoever, that the mysterious Angel mentioned in the email is the code name for Chavez. But in the memo, Chavez goes by the code name Chavez. Well, so what? This is what. Colombia's invasion into Ecuador is a rank violation of international law condemned by every single Latin member of the Organization of American States. And George Bush just loved it. He called Uribe to back Colombia against what Bush called, quote, the continuing assault by narco-terrorists as well as the provocative maneuvers by the regime in Venezuela, end quote. Well, Palace writes, our president may have gotten the facts asked backward, but Bush knows what he's doing. He is shoring up his last faltering ally in South America, Uribe, a man desperate and in deep political trouble. Uribe claims he is going to bring charges against Chavez before the International Criminal Court. If Uribe goes there in person, I suggest you take a toothbrush. It was just discovered that right-wing death squads held murder planning sessions at Uribe's ranch. Uribe's associates have been called before the nation's Supreme Court and may face prison. Luckily, for a hemisphere on the verge of flames, the president of Ecuador, Rafael Correa, is one of the most level-headed, thoughtful men I've ever encountered. Correa is now flying from Quito to Brasilia to Caracas to keep the region from blowing sky high. While moving troops to his border, no chief of state can permit foreign tanks on their sovereign soil, Correa also refuses sanctuary to the FARC. Indeed, Ecuador has routed out 47 FARC bases, a better track record than Colombia's own corrupt military. For his cool, peaceable handling of this crisis, I will forgive Correa for apologizing after he called Bush, quote, a dim-witted president who has done great damage to this country and the world, end quote. Now, you can get all this, I guess, at gregpalace.com. It's also at TomPaine.com. Oh, the magic laptop. Isn't it funny how these magic computer files always turn up? They turn up near the border with Iran in Iraq and talk about, you know, the mechanisms being sent into Iraq to build IEDs, and it's just or the computer disks that turn up in a cave in Afghanistan that reveals all sorts of things about the alliance between the Pakistani military and the Taliban. You don't need to find a computer disk to know about that. I mean, if you pay attention to the politics in that part of the world. Oh well, but we're talking about the Bush crime family. And speaking of Nicaragua, I did earlier, that country, Nicaragua's president, Daniel Ortega, who was also freely elected, Ortega, he was the one that headed the Sandinistas during the Reagan years, the ones that Oliver North tried to murder. You know, we get these Spanish-speaking leaders in dictators, freely elected, really doesn't matter. We get them in these Central and South American countries, and if they don't play ball with the U.S. government and U.S. corporations, we will either create something like, oh, I don't know, the Contras, a CIA-organized, false, fake, phony-ass, revolutionary gang of thugs and criminals that caused all sorts of death inside Nicaragua, or we will embargo the country like we did with Cuba, or we will assassinate the leader like we did with Allende, or we will set up death squads as Negroponte did in three or four different countries in Central America. But we won't sit down and talk with them and say, well, what's your complaint? Let's try to work it out. No, 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 no. Because then we might have to share Nicaragua's bananas with the Nicaraguans. We might have to share Venezuelan's oil with the Venezuelans. We might have to share Cuba sugar cane with the Cubans. You see how that works? And we're not going to do that. How dare these people insist that it be done fairly, openly, and honestly? Jesus God! But you see, we Americans don't pay any attention to that. Do you know we mined the harbors of Nicaragua during the Reagan years, which is a criminal offense by the government of one country against the government of another? Reagan and Poindexter and Oliver North and Elliot Abrams and oh my God, the list just goes on and on. We mined their harbors. Nicaragua's President Daniel Ortega says he's breaking off diplomatic relations with Colombia. Mr. Ortega said, quote, we are breaking off relations because of of the political terrorism carried out by Colombian President Alvaro Uribe. He also said, where is it? I got to find this quote. He also said, he branded the Colombian raid a war crime, adding that Bogota, which receives billions of dollars in aid from Washington to fight drug trafficking, was just, quote, a lackey of United States imperialism, end quote. If anybody in Central America would know about U.S. imperialism, who is still a free man, it would be Daniel Ortega. Or who is still a head of state, it would be Daniel Ortega. This is hard stuff for Americans to deal with, I understand. It is extremely difficult to really look in the mirror and see what's there. You know, this is why the Israelis are having so many problems with the Palestinians. The same reason we have had so many problems with people in Central and South America. Because it is utterly impossible, for some reason, to look in the mirror and say, oh, that's who I am. I don't quite get that. I really don't.
Ready for Radical Talk Radio? Make mine Mike Malloy on Nova M.
It's about 10 before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Arnold is calling from Richmond, Indiana, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Arnold.
Hey, man. What's up?
You are.
Oh, man. I'm stuck out here in a blizzard.
Oh, that's right. You're working.
Yeah, well, I'm in a restaurant, man.
What? I've still got friends in Toledo, probably not too far from where you are. It's really bad, huh?
Well, you know, actually north of here, like up in Toledo, it's not snowing like hard at all. But down here, where that low came across there and hit that real cold front.
So you're not driving. So you're not driving. You're pulled over.
Boy, yeah, man. It's like 8 to 12 inches of snow here.
Oh, I'm sorry. The only reason I'm laughing is because I'm not there.
Oh, listen, I said I can't go no further. I saw a restaurant sign. I said I'm a pulling in here, and I'm here, man. I can't.
Smart thing to do, Arnold. Now that's not why you really called. I got you all sidetracked. What's up?
No, you know, would you was talking about that theory you had of Obama. And the white woman theory, you know.
Right.
You really shine some woman light on me. I never looked at it that way before.
Well, that wasn't, you know, that wasn't me that said that. That was a caller. And I think it was she was identified as a black woman who called my colleague Jeff Farias, his program. He does a show in Phoenix on KPHX, our flagship station. So I'm just borrowing from the Jeff Farias program. Which, by the way, you can hear, you can stream it every day. He's on right before I am. I think you have to go to the KPHX website. So I got that. Somebody sent me the email that said that caller called Jeff's program today and kind of ran that down, that this is the reason, in the caller's opinion, this is the reason that Barack Obama is having a hard time responding in as strident a way to Hillary Clinton's charges as her stridency. And you know, it made sense because I started thinking, well, that's right. That's
100%.
I had never thought of that.
And I listen to other talk shows, and I hear the Clinton supporters call up those shows, and they literally go, hey, they say everything but the N-word, you know?
I know.
Mean, they just, I mean, it's unreal. You know, one day she's going to slip and say it. She's going to slip and say the N-word. McCain going to slip and say it. I'm waiting for that day to come, man.
You know.
I'm so sick and tired of being so close and yet so far away in this election.
Well,
I've never seen nothing.
I hear you. And I kind of agree. I've been waiting for somebody to slip up with the N-word. I don't think Hillary will do it. But John McCain has got such a potty mouth to begin with. He's got a worse mouth than I do.
Well, I mean,
and that's saying something. And it's easy to push his buttons. So if Barack Obama does become the candidate for the Democrats, watch out.
I see where you're going with it. Yeah, you better believe that John McCain has his mouth has messed him up before, you know. But you know what? You know what? I'm looking for Hillary because she's in such a killer mood right now. Or mode, shall we say? She really people looking at it in a different light.
But I don't think she would. I don't think she would ever. You don't forget, Maggie Williams is running her campaign now, and Maggie Williams is an African American woman. No, I have to say I cannot hang racism on the Clintons. Although Bill came real close to it when he was trying to write off the South Carolina primary when Obama won it, and he said something to the effect, well, so did Jesse Jackson. I mean, you can read into that. You know, it's almost like Bill Clinton was declaring Obama to be the Negro candidate rather than just a candidate. So,
right.
Yeah, Bill dances around that, but right. I don't think the Clintons are racist. I have no doubt that John McCain can be, I don't know if he's racist or not, but I know he can be provoked into using the N-word. And
yeah.
Frankly, most white people can be provoked into using the N-word. Let's be real.
Right.
So,
she might even come up with her next attack, might say, well, you know, they talk about John McCain had a black baby. This guy right here, baby, fathered two black babies. she gonna do something. I mean, she's just that desperate. She's that desperate, and she looks really desperate, you know? This thing, but like I say, I'm so sick and tired of being so close, but yet so far away. I'm so sick and tired of George Bush always having the ups on these Democrats. The Republicans like down there in Florida, this governor, whatever his name is.
Charlie Crist,
and that whole state senator and Congress representatives, I mean, all of them Republicans. And they set this thing up so perfect because they knew it was going to happen. They knew it was going to happen. Democrats are so pumped up to win this election back. And they anything goes, man. And this Democrat Party is so gullible. You said it one night. You said, man, they would screw up a two car funeral procession.
Turn
it into a train wreck. You know, I mean, that's what they do it. I like Howard Dean, but Howard Dean really screwed up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that,
really
well, I don't know that he screwed up so much as the media jumped on him like I've never seen before because of his so-called scream. He didn't scream. He was just being enthusiastic, had a big grin on his face. He was talking about, you know, on to this place, on to that place, which is essentially what Bobby Kennedy said all those years ago, the night he got assassinated. Only he didn't say it the way Dean did. Now, the press, this miserable, stinking press that we have in this country, every time that Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama or even John McCain does one little tiny thing that has nothing to do with the issues, but they can pounce on and make it into a great big deal, they'll do it, whether it's a big deal or not. Now, there's certain things. I mean, for McCain to display the kind of bullying that he displayed, I don't know if you saw that videotape today, but McCain on the airplane and some reporter there was asking him about whether or not it was true about McCain and Kerry. There was talk about them running together in 2004 on a unity ticket. And McCain just gets all hostile and nasty and just kept verbally punching at this reporter, this female reporter. He wouldn't stop. Now, that kind of stuff, I think, needs to get out. Hey, I got to leave it there. I'll talk to you later.
Buddy.
All right, Arnold.
We'll see you, man.
Be safe, man. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. A couple emails here and then back to your phone calls. I think we have a couple open lines, don't we? Or are they all open? Oh, no, not completely. We do have two open lines if you want to get in here. I'm not going to make you wait, I promise. 800-989-1480. This is from Lance in Manhattan, right? Speaking of racism, did you hear the Clinton and Obama responses to the most recent slaughter of Palestinian women and children? On Democracy Now!, Amy Goodman's program, they played both sets of their disgusting remarks, shortly thereafter showing a picture of a murdered one-month-old Palestinian baby shot to death by an Israeli soldier. Day after day, Israel murders Palestinian children, and we are supporting it every time we pay taxes and or vote for people like Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. As much as I detest the right-wing politicians and media for pumping out the Israel First propaganda, I'm just as dismayed with those in the media who only bend enough to say something along the lines that both groups are at fault. Blaming the Palestinians as much as the Israelis because the Palestinians dare to fight back while Israel steals their land, ignores UN resolution after resolution to give back some of the stolen land, fences them in, refuses them access to many roads because of their race, forces them to endure indiscriminate house and body searches because of their race, bulldozes Palestinian homes to encourage them to leave their own land, denies them electricity, denies them water, denies them food, denies them medicine, and flagrantly, intentionally kills innocent civilians when Hamas dares to fight back, blaming the Palestinians is on par. Blaming the Palestinians on par with the Israelis, blaming them both, is like saying the Native Americans and the whites were both at fault for the atrocities committed here. You know, if those damn Indians would have voluntarily surrendered their land and then just killed themselves, all of those atrocities could have been avoided, just like in Palestine. I do not understand how any liberal or even any Democrat could support Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. Isn't their insane stance on this vital issue more than enough to dismiss these moral lightweights? If not, they are wrong on most other issues as well. But I really would like somebody to tell me how they can support Clinton or Obama, knowing their position, reading their own words about the racist, classist, in the name of religion, butchering of the Palestinians. Lance, P.S., I am not anti-American. Yeah, you got to add that little disclaimer at the end these days because, well, not these days. It's always been that way. I remember in the 50s, I was too young to participate in any of this madness, but I remember there are certain topics that you could not discuss during the Red Scare, during the House Un-American Activities Committee hearings, during the time in Hollywood and in the artistic community in this country. People were ratting out other people during the time when it became clear in the 50s that back in the 30s, during the time of severe economic troubles in this country, people had been sympathetic to or members of left-wing socialist and in sometimes communist organizations that didn't seek to overthrow the government of the United States but did seek to bring a little bit more economic parity to people who were desperate in this country, who were dropping like flies, whites, blacks, Jew, Gentile, it didn't make any difference. And because of the support that some of these artists and writers and actors and screenwriters and directors and producers had shown for that left-wing political point of view, when Senator Eugene McCarthy and the House Un-American Activities Committee and all these right-wing monsters had a platform and a forum, they took full advantage of it. Are you now or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party? I refuse to answer on the grounds of my Fifth Amendment's rights. Lock that son of a bitch up! So this has been going on for a long time. It's been going on for a long time. There is nothing really that new here. It's just that we change, not we, but the rationales for political suppression are changed. But as far as the racism, I have a hard time seeing. The only place I would disagree with Lance, and it's only on a disagreement of degrees, not substance, but to declare a racial difference between Israeli Jews and Palestinian Arabs. I have a hard time doing that. I don't know, maybe that. What did I read the other day? That the blending of Arabic, Muslim culture, Muslim slash Arabic culture, and Ashkenazi or Sephardic Jewish the Mediterranean culture hundreds of years ago, you know, Jews became Muslims. Muslims became Jews. There was a complete blending, and not because the Christians were holding swords over their heads. This is before the crazy Christians started their slaughter of Jews and Muslims. This was just because the religions were so similar. The origins of the two faiths were so similar. The avatars of the two faiths were so similar to the concept of creation is identical. The concept of the early prophets, they're exactly the same. You know, they both claim to be sons of Abraham. It's insanity. It is insanity. But there is one major perpetrator here. You can take a look at the words of Moshe Dayan. You can take a look at the words of David Ben-Gurion. You can take a look at the words of the early leaders of Israel. Use their words. Use their words to explain the sin. Now, don't take the word of a Palestinian. Don't take the word of an American. Don't take the word of,
obviously anti-Semite like Mike Malloy. Take the words of the people who founded the State of Israel about what their intent was and their total disrespect for the people who already live there.
Come on. But you should see some of the email I've gotten. Wow! Pretty incredible stuff from people who write this kind of putrid hate letters to me and then include their academic credentials. You know, well, I'm a professor of this or that. Samantha Power is the one who made the statement that Hillary Clinton is a monster. She was a foreign policy advisor to Barack Obama, human rights advocate, international law scholar, author of the Pulitzer Prize-winning book, A Problem from Hell, America and the Age of Genocide. She was born in Ireland in 1970, took American citizenship. She's a journalist, writer, professor, currently affiliated with the Carr Center for Human Rights at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government. Pulitzer Prize winner, senior advisor to Barack Obama until resigning for remarks she made about Hillary Clinton that were disavowed by Obama. In 2004, she endorsed Wesley Clark. Back to your phone calls. Stephen is calling from Burbank, California, listening on KTLK. Hey, Stephen.
Yeah, hi, Mike.
Hi.
We were talking about the exploitation in South Central America and all that, and I work with a lot of Hispanics. You name it, Guatemala, Costa Rica, El Salvador, Nicaragua, and when I walked in there and I just, you know, had a wild hair, I just said, United Fruit. Their eyes lit up, and they knew exactly what I was talking about. They knew
sure.
exactly where I was coming from.
Sure, absolutely.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just total creepy violence, too. Like Union Carbide goes into India.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Bhopal, India, all
that's
that poison
right.
gas going around, there was no guns, and there was no, but they didn't have to pay off anything. I mean, they skated on that. And, you know, I get to thinking about this stuff, and, you know, it's just too much.
Yeah, it's unnerving, and people who don't understand the history, who said it, I'm paraphrasing, people who don't understand history are doomed to repeat it or something like that. Stephen, I have to leave there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. I hope you call back. The history of the U.S. where it concerns our foreign policy is bloody as hell. It's as bad as the foreign policy of any imperialist country on earth. But, you know, we seem to think we have a special dispensation to do these things. No, we don't. This is why the world looks at us like we're crazy people.
So much power.
The best way to defeat the totalitarian of hate is with an ideology of hope, an ideology of hate.
Good, Chucklenuts, good. Apparently I said Gene McCarthy a couple of minutes ago. I meant Senator Joe McCarthy. I just haven't had enough coffee from superbeans.com tonight. Otherwise, I wouldn't have said that. Uh, 21 past the hour. Back to your phone calls. And Bill is calling from Orange County, California, listening on KTLK. Bill, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Bill. Mike. It's good to be on with you, Mike.
My pleasure.
Mike, the reason I called is that I've been listening to you. I always enjoy your show. Earlier today, Randy Rhodes got wild and crazy and made the comment that Hillary was treating Obama as though he had cut in line.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that struck me is that for the first time, someone has characterized the way I feel. I'm 3 months younger than Hillary, or 6 months younger.
Mm-hmm.
And what I haven't heard from Obama is a compelling argument to explain why he needs to be president now and her not at all. I guess what I'm saying is he should have waited his turn.
Well,
because nothing that he has said, just to finish real quickly,
mm-hmm.
nothing he has said leads me to believe that any policies that he would adopt as president or even the members of his administration would be noticeably different than what Hillary did to the office.
Well, okay. But the whole thesis of the argument there that somebody cut in line, I don't quite get that. Is there an order of succession? Is there an order of is there a line? As a matter of fact, Randy making that statement, that to me kind of makes sense, that Hillary would feel that it was now her turn. And is that any more legitimate? And I'm not challenging, I'm just asking a question. Is her feeling any more legitimate than the statement that Barack Obama may have cut in line? I mean, why would she say that? Or why would somebody make that comment? Hillary has made it clear, I think, by implication, certainly not, I don't think she's come out and said this, that would be political suicide, but she's made it kind of clear, hasn't she, that it is her turn. Now, a lot of the debate that I see going on liberal websites, and it's getting vicious between Obama supporters and Clinton supporters, is really, really degenerating. But that's okay. It's a blood sport. Politics is a blood sport. But the argument that I see, or not argument, but point of view, is that Hillary Clinton has made it very clear that this is her baby. She was almost crowned. You know, the whole reason for front-loading the Democratic primaries was to make sure that she got it. Before, and I've heard Democratic organizers say that this is not my idea, but before people came out of the ether, Hillary would have it locked up before anyone else could mount a successful challenge. So it would make sense to me, in a perverse sort of way, that Hillary Clinton might feel that Barack Obama cut in line. But, you know, my answer to that is, where's this line? How did George Bush get into it? You see what I'm saying?
Well, Mike, I do, and I didn't call to be argumentative. But
no, not at all, not at all.
What I was calling to express is that if that's Hillary's perspective, and I suspect it is,
mm-hmm.
it's one that I can sort of empathize with. And the reason that I'm reluctant to be more open to an Obama candidacy at this time
mm-hmm.
is that, from my perspective, he's made it a test of personality because there has not been any noticeable distinction in what we could expect from a presidential or an executive administration of either of them.
Well, I agree with that.
And therefore, yeah. The conversation is all about style and...
Right.
And this bickering, mm-hmm. and it's not about the big issues of where this country's going.
Right. No, I completely agree with you on that. That's why I just shudder at the fact. I don't know what I'm going to do on election day this year for the presidency if we have one, and I'm not so sure that's going to come off. But if we do have one, and I walk in to vote, you know, what am I going to do? I'm a lifelong Democrat. I agree with you. There's no difference between these two candidates, except maybe a little bit around the edges. There's a little bit difference in their approach to what they call universal health care, which is a scam. Both of them are running a scam on that one. But there's a little bit difference in their approach. There's a little bit difference in their approach to U.S. military and our involvement. Hillary Clinton is a globalist. I won't use the word imperialist. She's a globalist. I'm not sure, so sure. She has the full and certain support of the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned against. I don't know if Barack has that. He may get it. I don't think he has it right now to the extent that Hillary does. I don't know. I think Barack Obama might be a little bit more sincere about social justice or social programs in this country that, like infrastructure and stuff like that, that certainly need to be addressed in Hillary. So I think there are a few differences, but essentially I agree with you there's no way, Bill, that you can get a credit card between the two of them where it concerns their differences. I got to leave you there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate it. Take care. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Neocons, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's more Mike Malloy.
Yeah, they're shaking in their boots. They're shaking in their straitjackets. Oliver North. Oh, my God. We want to play something. It's time for a little musical interlude. And for those of you who are waiting for the Who Stole the Kishka, we're going to pass on that tonight. We have one here called This is the Mom Song. William sung to the William Tell Overture, and this is a mother. I'm not sure where this occurred, but she's standing in front of a huge audience and singing this song. So for those of you who are mothers or aunts or whatever, spent any time around little kids, check it out.
Get up out of bed, wash your face, brush your teeth, comb your sleepy head. Here's your clothes and your shoes, hear the words I said. Get up now, get up and make your bed. Are you hot, are you cold, are you wearing that? Where's your books and your lunch and your homework at? Grab your coat and your gloves and your scarf and hat. Don't forget, you gotta feed the cat. Eat your breakfast, the experts tell us it's the most important meal of all. Take your vitamins so you will grow up one day to be big and tough. You can remember the word with God, we'll be seeing you at 3 2. Don't forget your piano lesson, it's this afternoon, so you must play, don't shovel. Choose slowly, but hurry, the bus is here. Be careful, come back here. Did you wash behind your ears? Play outside, don't leave a rope. Would you just play fair? Be polite, make a friend, don't forget to share. Work it out, wait your turn, never take a dare. Get along, don't make me come down there. Clean your room, fold your clothes, put your stuff away. Make a bed, do it now. Do we have all day? Were you born in a barn? Would you like some hay? Can you even hear a word I say? Answer, get off the phone. Don't sit so close, turn it down. No texting at the table. No more computer time tonight. Your iPod's my iPod if you don't listen up. Where are you going in what room and what time do you think you're coming home? Say thank you, please, excuse me, makes you welcome everywhere you roam. You'll appreciate my wisdom someday when you're older and you're grown. Can't wait till you have a couple little children of your own. You'll thank me for the counsel I gave you so willingly, but right now I thank you not to roll your eyes at me. Close your mouth when you chew, we'd appreciate. Take a bite, maybe two, of the stuff you hate. Use your fork, do not burp, or I'll set you straight. Eat the food I put upon your plate. Get an A, get a door, don't be smart with me. Get a grip, get in here, I'll count you three. Get a job, get a life, get a PhD, get a dose. I don't care if you're started, you're grounded until you're 36. Get your story straight and tell the truth for once, for heaven's sake. And if all your friends jumped off a cliff, would you jump too? If I said it once, I've said at least a thousand times before that you're too old to act this way. It must be your father's DNA. Look at me when I am talking, stand up straighter when you walk a place. For everything and everything must be in place. Stop crying or I'll give you something real to cry about. Oh!
shoes, wash your face, put your PJs on, get in bed, get a hug, say a prayer with Mom. Don't forget, I love you. And tomorrow we will do this all again, because you want whatever it is. You don't need the reason why.
Everything a mom says in a day, condensed into the William Tell Overture. You can find this at YouTube. What was the heading on it? That's great. I love that. What's the title on it?
The William Tell Overture Mom Song. William Tell Mom Sayings.
William Tell Mom Sayings. Go to YouTube and check this out. Who sent that in?
Our writer in residence, although she doesn't live here, Bridget Wolf.
Oh, really? Well, that's a great one. I love that. Sounds like a day in the life here with Molly. Oh, my God.
How about settle down, take your bath, time to get in bed?
Ron, also known as Graybeard, writes in the following regarding the N-word being used on Obama. He writes, more like the B-word. Hi, Mike. I really doubt that either Hillary or McCain will ever go so far as to use the N-word, even in an unguarded moment. To do so would be an error of nuclear proportions. Much more likely, and I expect to hear it soon, will be for Hill or McAnus to refer to Obama as boy. Hillary came close a few times speaking of Obama's inexperience and youth. In fact, Obama will be older on his first inauguration day than Bill Clinton was. Mark my words, Mike, it's coming. I call it the boy bomb. Oh, this is just turning in. You know, and here's the hellacious part. The Republicans are just sitting back. This is better than masturbation for Republicans. As a matter of fact, it's probably, no, it's not on equal parts. It's better than masturbation for Republicans because they get to watch the Democrats doing this, and it's escalating. You know it's escalating. And the main place it's escalating, of course, is on the Internet. In the chat rooms, on the various threads, this vitriol that's going between Obama supporters and Clinton supporters, I've never seen anything like this. I have not seen this in Democratic primaries before. I really haven't. This is almost on the level of the Gore-Nader dust-up in 2000. When Naderites just went nuclear, and Gore supporters accused the Naderites of everything short of trying to overthrow the government here, it's crazy. But the thing that bothers me about this, politics is a blood sport; it has to be this way, I guess. But I think what has happened, Democrats over the past 7 years have internalized so much resentment, rage at this puke and his administration, and I'm talking about Cheney, that took over this country and stuck this idiot out there, this George Bush as president. And I think Democrats have won. Republicans don't care. Republicans couldn't care less about what happens to the country because they hate America. They all want to live in Christ's lap or something. They hate America. They would just as soon see the country die so they can all rapture up to heaven or wherever they think they're going to go. But the Democrats have internalized so much of this rage. You know, it's like, well, we can't take it out on Bush or we'll get a visit from Homeland Security. And other than the Malloy program, who's going to scream the obscenities that we feel about this guy? So now they're taking it out on each other. It's a common occurrence. It is. It's kind of the reverse of the Stockholm syndrome. But it's upsetting to see because the only thing I can hope as a Democrat, even though I don't like either of these candidates in terms of being a Democrat, they are what they are. You know, they are what they are. But they're not Democrats. There is a Democrat running. He's got a website. He talks about single-payer health care and about stopping the war in U.S. imperialism and fairness in the tax structure and taking away the tax breaks to the ultra-uber-wealthy and his name... Oh, never mind. Never mind. But I'm just wondering if when it's finally decided, I get emails from people who say, and I've had to entertain the thought myself, if this candidate wins the Democratic nomination, Mike, I'm not going to vote for him, her. I won't do it. I can't, because he, she is scum, and his, her supporters have just turned into rabid dogs, so I will not support him, her. First time in my life, Mike, I will not vote Democratic. Now, a lot of that is, bravado. I've said things like that before in elections. You know, I'm not going to support that candidate, but I was going to stay out of the race here in the 5th Congressional District, the 4th Congressional District in Georgia after Cynthia McKinney was run out of town. But I went in and voted Democrat in both instances. 8 years ago and 4 years, or 6 years ago and 2 years, whenever it was, I don't know. Voted for the new Democrat. So, talk is cheap. I just hope that's the case this time. As an American citizen, I hate the fact that I don't have a real choice here. But truth be told, I guess, perhaps, maybe, I would rather see a Democrat in office than a Republican. But then again, been here, done this repeatedly. Keep waiting for a real Democrat to do something other than pop up every 4 years and open up a website, if you know what I mean, right? Back to your phone calls. Bob is calling from Vancouver, Washington, listening on KPOJ. Hey, Bob.
Yeah, Mike. Let me get off the speaker. Edwards was my guy, and unfortunately he chose to get out. This thing with Clinton and her attack machine has really got me bugged, and I'll tell you the truth, I'm in that group that you were just talking about of the folks that if she does wind up somehow getting a nomination, even though her numbers doesn't support that, I'll vote for Nader. He'll be on the ballot here in Washington, and I just can't, this whole Clinton thing, that's my due, and Obama as the interloper. I mean, this guy has garnered grassroots support. You know, a million people have sent in less than $2,300. I mean, her money's coming from big business, and whether she or McCain wind up as president, we're looking at another big business, Democrat, Republican, you pick it.
I know.
It's more the same.
I know. That's the part that so many real Democrats just choke on, and it's also the part that people who wouldn't necessarily call them a Democrat or themselves a Democrat or a Republican, but an American, they choke on it too. Bob, thanks. Got to leave it there. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Miami, FLA, hitchhiked her way across USA, plucked her eyebrows on the way, shaved her legs, and then he was a she. She says, hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side. said, hey, honey, take a walk on the wild side.
Thanks to the crew again tonight. Ian Huff, who engineered, also answered your calls. Billy Foster, our technical director. Ben Birch, the podcast manager. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Bob Alexander is our resident philosopher. Bridget Wolf is our writer in residence. The executive producer of this program is Catherine Bay. And don't forget, Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Don't forget, set your clocks forward when you go to bed Saturday night. DemocracyInteractive.com. I'm going to be on that program, hosted by our good friend Daryl. So tune in and listen. Play a little more of that. You know, after all these years, I still love that song. It just makes me want to close up here in Atlanta, move to New York. Back to your phone calls. Scott is calling from San Diego, listening via the Internet. Hey, Scott, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening, Mike. First of all, I've got to say that you are the best talk show host I've heard, and I've listened to talk show for a long time, and you are really good.
Oh, you're just saying that because it's true.
That's right. Secondarily, I admire KPHX. I'm in San Diego. We're homeless here.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, we're really feeling bad. We're going to get a new stick. We are going to get a new stick, but KPHX does such a great job of supporting the liberal community, and the liberal community really supports KPHX, as our station, KLSD, was, I don't know who they were supporting, but anyway, the reason I called is our corruption, our incursion into South America began in the 1840s. We were propping up the Peruvian government. We were buying bird guano, bird droppings off of rocks. And
it goes back to the 1840s?
It goes back to the 1840s.
God.
We were propping up a hated dictator in Peru. This comes from a book that's not been translated into English yet. It's called Siete Ensayos. It means the seven essays. And they talked about the economic and political condition of Peru in the 1840s, 1850s, and 1860s. And what happened was the United States was buying so much bird droppings off of these rocks that we were supporting an entire economy. And the dictator wasn't interested in diversifying. Mm-hmm. So after the Civil War, the United States discovered chemical fertilizers through oil, and the Peruvian economy completely collapsed, and they had chaos and all the rest of that stuff. So the United States incursion began in South America really in about the 1840s and 1850s.
Wow, I wasn't aware of that.
If you find the book, it's called Siete Ensayos. As far as I know, it's still in Spanish.
Siete Ensayos, okay.
Siete Ensayos, it means seven essays.
I'll try to get it, and then I'll just run it through my Babelfish translator and get it from Spanish all into English.
So, we've been down there for a long time messing around with their governments, and I know Greg Palast. He's a friend of mine. I get a lot of updates about Hugo Chavez, and he's doing, I think, some really great work. He's fighting off the incursions into his country. You know, he's closing down Citgo stations throughout the United States, and he's opening up his cracking facility in Cuba. Mm-hmm. He is moving it from New Orleans to Cuba. And, Mike, this is not a good thing for us.
No, this is not good.
By the way, I don't know if you know this, but Hugo Chavez offered George W. Bush oil at $50 a barrel.
I remember that. And Bush just gave him the finger.
You know why he gave him the finger?
Because the oil companies didn't want $50 a barrel.
No. Hugo Chavez said, you cannot have our money. We will not be buying Citibank. We will not be buying Manhattan. We will not be supporting your economy. All this money from our oil goes back to our country to support our streets, our schools, our health care system. We will not be giving it to you.
Oh, no.
Bush got really ticked.
Yeah, can't have that.
That's why Exxon in Britain filed the lien against their oil, because mm-hmm. Exxon wants it back.
Well, this is a classic example of corporatist imperialism. What is happening here? The two sides squaring off, one offensively and one defensively, is the sovereign nation of Venezuela and this corporate behemoth ExxonMobil.
This is just a repeat. The British government was using their soldiers to protect the East India Company, the largest corporation mm-hmm. of its time.
Mm-hmm.
Britain used the English soldiers to protect the tea trade, to protect their trade routes, and to establish trade in India, Singapore, China, the United States, all over. And they used the English troops to do that. And are we doing now, Mike?
Well, to a lesser degree, the U.S. has been using the military, or the Marine Corps especially, to enforce
trade policy.
Yeah, the trade policy here in the Western Hemisphere. This is what General Smedley Butler wrote about, the only two-time Congressional Medal of Honor winner who wrote War is a Racket. If you're not familiar with that, just do a quick...
I'm very familiar with it.
Oh, okay.
Please go ahead. Please tell me.
I was just going to say, do a Google. You'll get the whole thing. It's not that long.
And they tried to bring down FDR's government.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And DuPont was behind it. And Smedley Butler went to Congress and said, hey, people are trying to throw the president out of office. It's DuPont, Henry Ford, you know, maybe Prescott Bush. They're trying to throw FDR out of government.
Don't we have an entertaining history, Scott? Hey, listen,
I'm a history major, Mike. I love this stuff.
I do, too. I got to leave there. Thank you, Scott. I appreciate it. Thanks for checking in. And to the folks who are leaving on hold here, I'm sorry. I apologize. We didn't get to you. Have a good weekend. Be careful, all right? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Have a great weekend. Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.